The following is paid programming brought to you by WT Wealth Management. Nothing we discuss should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational purposes only. Please do your own research and speak to an investment advisor or financial planner before making any investment decisions. All right, welcome to Intelligent Investing with Glenn Liest. I'm your host, Jeff Horvitz. Glenn would love to hear from you. Phone number 928-225-2474. And Glenn, we're continuing on with Bill Baker, who's an accountant, tax preparation, tax planning. And the wonderful subject of taxes, we decided needed two parts because I think we're going to get more into incentives, subsidies.
There's a lot to it. There's when you talk about taxes, there's like, what do you want to talk about? There's a lot there. Yeah.
There's a big book. I mean, it's like, how high is the tax code? Have you ever printed it out?
No, you couldn't.
There's not enough ink in the world. I think we wanted to hit though more on, first of all, there's this myth, I guess, that most people just inherit their money, inherit their wealth. I think we were talking about that before we came on air, Glenn. You want to touch on that a bit?
So a lot of times, I don't know why there's this misconception, you know, when it comes to wealth, or like, I've heard this before, people say, oh, well, the rich people don't pay their fair share. But when you look at the tax code, you look how it's progressive. And as you make more money, you pay a whole lot more. You go, well, that doesn't seem to be accurate. Oh, people are rich because they inherited all their wealth. And you look at the stats, this majority of people are self-made. You know, millionaires, very few of them actually get wealth. A lot of them made businesses or great investments and had to work hard. So I don't know where that notion of, you know, people who have it just somehow magically, you know, got money. It's money doesn't grow on trees. You have to go out and work for it. And it's never easy. If you know a shortcut of how to make money easy,
people have been trying to find that for millennia.
It takes a lot of hard work and discipline. So,
And then a lot of people that inherit the wealth, the second generation, definitely the third generation, they tend to lose it. It's been what I've seen. It's pretty rare.
If it's not handled properly, If they just are not educated and helped show how to manage it, like the lottery winners, when people win the lottery, if they weren't financially savvy before, putting more money into the equation doesn't make it any better.
In fact, you can blow through $50 million quicker than you think.
Yeah, it really is pretty catastrophic. Watch documentaries on it with people that win the lottery. A lot of them say it's the worst thing that ever happened to them because it just destroys their life if they're not ready for it. So anyways, tax misconception one is, you know, the wealthy people don't pay their fair share. Or I've even heard corporations don't pay their fair share, which is interesting because Bill and I were talking offline is that some of the big companies, like I think you're saying majority of them, I get like audited every single year. There's like an assigned probably IRS agent to them that are just combing through their books. A lot of them have full departments. So what do you think of that, that misconception that corporations don't pay their fair share?
Correct. Right. So the large corporations have the IRS in their office all the time. Yeah. You can read their annual reports and they'll tell you right in there where we have a few things we're still negotiating over 2000 and whatever. And so they are always being audited and reviewed. That just is continual for large corporations. For small corporations, it's not necessarily the case. For small businesses, we have less than $50 million. I know it sounds like a lot, but that's considered small in the IRS world. And they do not get audited as often. But these large companies, they're always being
all the time.
Notion that they're somehow cheating the tax code or not paying what's, you know, rightfully that they have to pay according to the taxes. I think it's incorrect. Well,
wouldn't it be a lot harder to? I mean, with a publicly traded company, there's so much disclosures and information out there. And Glenn, you know this. With WT Wealth Management dealing with this stuff every day. It's kind of hard to. It's a lot harder to cheat those numbers. Like, I mean, we've seen grand cases like Enron and things like that.
They didn't cheat on taxes. They cheated on just cheating.
They brought cheating to a whole new level.
I think I recall President Trump when he had said he'd been audited for 15 years in a row or something like that. And quite honestly, that's not an unusual statement. He also mentioned that he was professionally treated and such like that. So he's a private company. We don't own any shares in Trump Towers. And I think that's common. He wasn't it wasn't personal to him. That's just where the IRS goes.
Normal operating procedure.
Yeah. So, okay. So corporations, they're, you know, once they get to a certain size, they've got a lot of people with a fine tooth comb looking at them. Cause I've actually heard we're going to hire all these new IRS agents and they're going to go after the tax cheats, the billionaires or the corporations not paying their fair share. But if those people are already have been pretty big targets and are getting a lot of attention by the IRS already, my follow-up question is, well, if they're not going to ramp up auditing them more because they're already being audited and looked at, where are all those 87,000?
What are they going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So I have a bit of a concern about that. So when folks get to be fairly of any kind of size, they start looking around for people like me to help keep them in the lines and make sure they're playing by the rules and, mm-hmm. and how do they, of course, you know, reduce their taxes. So they have guidance in general and are making as good a decisions as they can make. So I will tell you my concern over the 87,000 is over ordinary folks. And we talked a little bit about certain incentives in the tax code. Now, you get unintended consequences anytime you have tax decisions. And Congress has attempted to manipulate behavior over the years mm-hmm. through the tax code. So a long time ago, I want to say it was during the second George Bush administration. Now, notice we think of tax in the related to presidents. Yep. And again, yep. it's not the president, but it was during his administration. We introduced something called earned income credit. And I remember at the time saying the idea was, hey, we have somebody who's just not earning that much money. They're mm-hmm. working. They're just, and so the taxpayers are going to give them a break and actually give them money for working and having children.
Yeah.
And help them out. Well, that has kind of mushroomed into something.
And big surprise.
Yeah. It's the biggest area of fraud that the IRS had to deal with. Us taxpayers gave away billions to fraudulent earned income credit claims. But we run into a situation in today's society where we have a couple who are not married, but they live together similar to being married. They even have children together. Mm-hmm. And what invariably occurs is one of the spouses has a pretty good paying job, and that spouse files their tax return. They're a single person. The other spouse, of course, is raising the kids or with the kids and does not necessarily have so much income. And they file their tax return as a head of household and make the most of these earned income credits. And they collect refundable credits, meaning I did not pay the tax. It's not my own tax money coming back. It's actually my neighbor's tax money coming to me. So I get this refund, and it's created a situation where that's what they're used to living on now. And it's not correct. The reason it's not correct is in order to get the earned income credit, one of the things you have to do is provide more than 50% of the support for that dependent. Well, it's not the person filing the tax return, it's the other spouse, right? Who's not a spouse. Well, my concern is these 87,000 agents are looking for that person because the wealthy businessman, if you will, has already hired me to keep them in the lines and how to play the rules. This other scenario is wide open. And I think this is speculation on my part because they're looking for enforcement. They've said that these 87,000 agents will enforce. And that's a huge area.
It makes sense because you were already telling us that the corporations are already heavily looked at.
Small
businesses are going through people like you. And just to remind everyone, Bill Baker's with us. He's with Granite Mountain Accounting. So people like Glenn have hired you, for example, to keep him in the lane. Then someone else who does their taxes maybe on the online fill-in form and then does the kind of the tricks you're talking about that might be coming after them.
So the interesting story is I have met people and I know them from growing up that are doing that specific arrangement so they can get more tax refund. They have, you know, they're not married, but they've been together for 15 years. They've got three kids, live together, but one of them is a single mom with three kids. Then the other one is just, you know, working as a head of, you know, single filing, you know, his taxes. And so it is, for me, I always think of like just, I don't know anyone that would go along with that arrangement to say, oh, you know, we're going to, you know, I want you to have, marry me and have, or, you know, have kids and, you know, play, you know, live together and everything, but I'm not actually going to marry you, you know, for tax purposes. I find that, challenging that anyone would want to do that, but there are people that are doing that for those tax incentives. So you talk about unintended consequences. And so it's shaping their behavior. And one of the problems we've had in our nation, frankly, is, you know, broken homes. So people not having a mom and a dad together and not married, that's an issue. That's a lot of, behavioral issues have happened from that, phenomenon in our country. Even, you know, last 40 years, they've incentivized, you know, from a good place to say, hey, we want single mothers and people that are, you know, don't have, that aren't married and they have kids to be able to get more help. But then it's also created this scenario where they don't want to get married and keep having more kids to keep getting more help. And they get stuck in this loop almost. So I think it's very important when you look at taxes, to look at what could the unintended consequences be in this, you know, the earned income tax credit. I think there's a lot of people that maybe aren't being 100% truthful with their situation. And I think those, what you're saying is those agents are probably going to be looking at that with a more of a fine tooth comb.
Yeah. It causes you to ask the question, did the tax code destroy the nuclear family in America?
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, did it? Because a large percentage of households are this arrangement today. Mm-hmm. And they may not have started out from high school that way, right?
Yeah.
Your high school sweetheart. But at some point later in life, they've met and now they've continued on this arrangement and have not created a nuclear family.
Well, yeah. What I think we should do is when we come back from our break, talk about tax policy as far as not only shaping behavior like you've been talking about, but also when it comes to companies and activity. Mm-hmm. I mean, we hear a lot about, oh, we're going to offer all these incentives, for example, the electric cars or the solar or this or that. But that's nothing new because there's always been a push to incentivize the direction that I guess the government wants you to go.
Yep.
Is that a fair assessment, Bill?
That's a fair.
Okay. So let's come back with that. And remember, Glenn would love to hear from you. Give him a call anytime. You can call Glenn at 928, let me get this out, Glenn, 928-225-2474. That's 928-225-2474. And don't forget about the podcast. Look up Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least on any of your favorite podcast providers. And I know you put a lot of extra stuff out there as well.
A lot of extra content
beyond what we do here every week. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least. Give Glenn a call right now at 928-225-2474. That's 928-225-2474. More Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least when we come back. You're listening to Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least. Give Glenn a call at 928-225-2474. Glenn is here with Bill Baker, who's an accountant, tax planner, tax professional. We've covered a lot of ground. If you missed last week's podcast, you can look that up by looking up looking up Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least on your favorite podcast provider.
Yep.
I think the IRS, that's one of the scarier words, Glenn. IRS. I think for a lot of people is the IRS, especially
top five fears. It's snakes, public heights, speaking, and snakes, public speaking and IRS.
And IRS, especially nobody ever wants to get audited.
Yeah.
But we were going to talk about though with the incentives that I guess the tax code is written in a way, as you mentioned, Congress creates the tax code,
correct,
and the tax rates and all that. Although the president can help push that policy, he's a big obviously. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's a lot of incentives and subsidies and yep. pushes to get kind of people and companies to go to the direction the government
yeah.
wants.
Yeah, we see that all the time. We see it with the agricultural industry. We see that with solar panels. We see that with electronic vehicles. We even see it with municipalities and states trying to incentivize businesses, companies, big companies to have their headquarters located in their towns. And for me, I've seen sometimes this thing happen with politicians where maybe a big company wants to come into their city and the city's going to offer them some tax rebates or tax incentives for a period of time. And the politician goes, oh, we don't want to give them a free ride. We don't want to give them these tax credits. Go take your business somewhere else. And the companies do it. They go somewhere else. And to me, that shows maybe some short-sightedness because you have to look at, say, this is happening down in Phoenix where these big companies are moving in and creating big, you know, manufacturing plants for chips. And they've rightfully got a lot of incentives from the state and from the cities to say, hey, we'll give you a break on some of our taxes, you know, for property taxes or whatever it may be for a period of time. But what about how many jobs that's going to bring in? So if you have a big facility and brings in 50,000 new jobs, well, those people are going to pay city tax and they're going to pay real estate tax. They're also going to be buying more goods and services. So I think a lot of times when you look at those subsidies, they can actually be a really good thing if done correctly. They can also be just completely catastrophic. I mean, if you give too many subsidies for a terrible idea, you know, you get more terrible ideas. Like, and sometimes in the farming industry, you have certain crops are just overproduced because of weird subsidies yeah. that have been in place that just
might be
never
cheaper
went away.
To buy people a condo and not grow certain things. Maybe.
Exactly. Yes. They have all these things happening. So yeah. So down in Phoenix, in the Phoenix area, they're doing more, it's the chip manufacturer that's building a big plant. And what are some of the other different impacts? So say is a big plant like that moves in, what are some of the economic impacts that we'll have from a positive perspective?
Oh, goodness sakes, you're going to bring in, you know, thousands of people. So people generate wealth. Gold doesn't generate wealth. It just sits there. It looks pretty. Silver doesn't generate wealth. People generate wealth. Mm. And you're going to bring in thousands of folks. Arizona has a lot of things going for it. We have room, we have space, and it's inexpensive land comparatively to other areas. We have infrastructure in place where you can deliver electricity. That's going to become a commodity probably in the somewhat near future. Anyway, we can deliver electricity. We have good education here. And it's easy to get around and get in and out airports, trains and freeways and such. So that just exactly what you had said, Glenn, is you're going to have, let's just say 5,000 people. And economists know these numbers. I'm not an economist, but it's going to 5,000 new jobs and it's probably 50,000. I've noticed that they're building on the east side,
huge,
and the north side.
Huge place,
it's kind of fun. You see all those giant cranes when you drive past there. There's going to be 50,000 people come here to go to work. 50,000 people will to go to work are going to create another 200,000 jobs probably to support that.
Well, they need houses. They need haircuts. They need insurance. Right. They need groceries.
They need tax guys.
They need tax guys. They need financial planners.
Yeah. The value of your local radio show is going to go up because you have more people listening to it. There's tons of benefits from that. So it's people, right? You want people. The other thing Arizona has going for it is climate. We've got great climate. I've never lived in the back east where it's cold and wet all the time, but I've noticed folks have a tendency to come this direction, not go that direction.
Yeah. So in order to incentivize or attract some of these businesses, the states and cities may say, hey, we're going to offer you some concessions, some tax breaks or whatever it may be for a period of time. They may not get tax revenue on that particular area, but they're going to be making up for it everywhere else. Like I've even heard this phenomenon or philosophy to say, hey, if you actually just lower the overall tax rate but make it simpler, you'll actually generate more revenue because more people will want to be productive. And so or the other side of the coin is people will say, well, I'll just raise a bunch of taxes and then that stifles economic output. So sometimes some of these policies, you got to be very careful with how they're structured because they can really work quite well or they can be completely destructive. You got states like California that just tax and tax and tax and tax and businesses finally just cry uncle and then they move next door to us and, you know, greener pastures and still close by. And so you really want to, when you're talking about manipulating behavior with tax codes, that could be one positive thing that the government and municipalities are able to do is incentivize.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think every economics professor will tell you if you want less of something, then tax it. So obviously, if you reduce the tax, you'll get more of something, which would be development, right? You get the chip factory being developed. And so let's say you give up those real estate taxes. I don't know what the deals are, but let's say you give up the real estate tax and you bring in 50,000 employees. Well, they all have to live somewhere. Let's just go with that alone. Well, all your developers will go out and are going to improve the value of that desert out there. And they're going to put in curbs and all that. And those 50,000 people are going to buy homes or rent homes and pay real estate taxes and make the county wealthier.
And then Glenn, you spend a lot of time on so many past episodes and podcasts and shows. How do people further themselves? How do the people get themselves in a better situation? I think that's maybe what we want to leave here at the end of this two-part series we've done on taxes with Bill. Is we've talked about the incentives that businesses have and stuff, but I mean, what can the average person do now, I guess, when it comes to tax planning and trying to figure out how maybe they can take advantage of some of these incentives? Different examples other than not getting married and doing what you said earlier. legal examples here.
Really educating, helping. The more that people understand about taxes and money and investing, the more they're going to be successful at it. Because some of the battle is just knowledge, right? Understanding. And the other part is behavior. You can know everything about money, but if you can't ever save any money and spend every dollar you have, then you're not going to be successful. So I think with taxes, just starting to understand the basics of how they work. And if you don't want to be your own tax person, then hire a professional who can and does know that part of it for you and can help guide you in the right direction. Bill and I have worked together for years, and I know enough about what we do to feel comfortable with the game plan, but I by no means, you know, want to be filing my own taxes. I want to make sure I've got a professional, an expert in that area that could help me dial it in. So that's one thing people can do is educate themselves and look at maybe hiring a professional. There's lots of different great CPAs that I work with in town, tax professionals. Bill's one that we have on the show now, but you know, some of my other contacts that I have are great people. So I'd say, you know, reach out and talk to the professional to help you in that area, and they're gonna be worth every penny they pay, you know, you pay them. You're gonna, you know, pay a little bit of money for their time and energy, but just one mistake or one issue or one missed thing could cost you, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, or, you know, so it is worth it to have someone in your corner that can really help.
It's a complex thing that most people can't go. It's like being your own lawyer.
You don't want to be your own lawyer.
As soon as they say I'll be representing myself, judge is like,
you can't get a mistrial here.
So what you want to do as an individual person is enterprise. You want to add to your W-2, your regular wage, buy a piece of real estate and start enterprising with a rental, start some kind of small side business, and you will then be able to use more of these tax advantages, if you will, to lower your taxable income and build wealth ultimately.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
All right, and I know that you work with Bill Baker, and people can get in touch with you. Glenn, give out all the different ways you want them to get in touch with you, and plus, maybe in the podcast notes you put Bill's number there as well. Yeah, maybe it's piqued someone's interest.
Yeah, absolutely. Get a hold of me, Glenn Least, at 928-225-2474, or you can email me at intelligentinvesting@wtwealthmanagement.com. And Bill, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, the best way is to call our Las Cruces office at 575-521-7700. And they have some way, I don't know how it is, but they find me and they track me down.
And Bill's got two offices, one here and in Flagstaff and one in New Mexico.
Right.
There's no way to hide anymore. No way to hide. Find you, right?
Yeah.
All right. And remember to look up Intelligent Investing with Glenn Least on your favorite podcast provider. Bill, Glenn, we'll be back next week. Same time.
Same time.
New topics. Never short of things to talk about. Everybody have a great day. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
The following has been paid programming brought to you by WT Wealth Management. Nothing we've discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation was for informational purposes only. Please do your own research and speak to an investment advisor or financial planner before making any investment decisions.